Today, Austria's vice chancellor called the political sanctions imposed by European Union states hypocritical. 14 countries froze diplomatic ties with Vienna in February after Austria's far-right Freedom Party became part of a coalition government. The EU members were responding to anti-immigrant remarks by the head of the party, Jörg Haider. Haider also had made remarks interpreted as downplaying the Nazi Holocaust. Jörg Haider has since stepped down as head of the Freedom Party. His successor, Susanna Ries-Pauser, says the sanctions are hypocritical because Austria has a better record of welcoming refugees than other EU members. Veteran newsman Robert Trout has been watching developments in Austria from his perspective of more than 60 years in broadcasting.
With so much history in Europe's closet, it's no wonder that we have periodic panic attacks that the demons will crawl back out again. That's the only way to explain the bustle in Austria over the coming of the latest mini-Hitler. It's clear that the world is far more fixated on the second coming of the house painter than the carpenter. But if one lives long enough, one slowly learns that second comings are a long time coming. Historians may look back, but history does not. It is far too creative. It has a capacity for variation, surprise, and bafflement that imagination cannot anticipate. It seems to delight in repeating itself in little ways, only to persuade us that we have broken its codes. All the while, it is diverting our eyes from the fresh plots and villains it is inventing and will spring on us in ways we least expect. That's why almost no one agrees on the lessons of history. Whatever Haider's views, the political temperature in Vienna today seems well below the level I reported on CBS Radio in March 1938, when the world trembled, torn by conflicting forces throughout this day,
as event has crowded upon event in tumultuous Austria. Meanwhile, the outside world, gravely shaken by the Austrian crisis, moves cautiously through a maze of diplomatic perils. Since the German troops crossed the Austrian border on the historic invasion last Friday, news has flowed across the Atlantic in a steady stream. As German troops swarm across frontiers in their first offensive since 1914, momentous decisions are being reached in the capitals outside Germany. The German chancellor now winds his way through the conquered nation in a parade of triumph to end in a tremendous spectacle in Vienna.
It was that tremendous spectacle that reminds me how little the Vienna of 1938 resembles the Vienna of 2000. There was a fanaticism in the air then that was truly frightening, not apologetic. Today, Haider apologizes and resigns. Hitler apologized for nothing. Looking back, the worst thing about that spectacle may have been that CBS radio listeners never heard it. Hitler had put the network into something of a dilemma. My colleague, Ed Murrow, was in the city but could not describe events as they happened because the Germans had taken over the radio stations. So CBS was faced with the alternative of carrying Germany's own coverage. We could have put it on the air, but we didn't. It was, after all, a staged German propaganda event, and Nazi propaganda was turning European radio into an instrument of conquest. We had heard word that 25,000 radios were being given away to any Austrians too poor to buy one. My boss, Paul White, didn't wish to be a party to Germany's push for ratings. Hitler arrived at the Imperial Hotel around 7 in the evening on the 14th. It was 1 in the afternoon in New York, and my colleagues and I at CBS wandered in and out of the newsroom, listening to the live shortwave German feed through CBS Central Control.
Hello, America. Special transmission emanating partly from Berlin, Germany, and Vienna, Austria, or we might perhaps say Vienna, Germany.
It might have been the BBC, except that no British newsman would refer to Vienna, Germany. The Berlin feeds contained two announcers, an often hysterical German-speaking broadcaster relayed from Vienna, and a courtly translator speaking from a Berlin studio in perfect BBC English.
This special transmission is intended for reception and rebroadcast in the United States by the Columbia and the Mutual Broadcasting Systems. It is radiated from Berlin featuring the original modulation that is coming on the landline from Vienna and fed to the stations of the Reichsrundfunk, the German broadcasting stations. Since there is only a single landline connecting Vienna and Germany, all we can do is to take this program as it stands and give some explanations in English from a studio in Berlin.
Every major news organization wants to control its contact. But maybe there was an unintended irony in our decision not to carry this astonishing transmission. The live sounds of those roaring crowds and the rapturous German announcers that CBS audiences never heard in 1938 may have conveyed more about Vienna at that moment than anything Ed Murrow could have reported later that day. At CBS, we were busy writing our reports based on what we heard from German radio, although we never broadcast the original feeds. We received our first sense of Viennese reaction when Hitler reached Vienna, arrived at the Imperial Hotel, and appeared on the balcony overlooking the Ringstrasse.
This is Berlin calling, the German shortwave station. We're now switching back again to Vienna.
100,000-köpfige Menge, es ist unmöglich, hier eine Schätzung abzugeben.
This is Edward Roderick Dietze again, chipping in from Berlin on the modulation coming from Vienna. The wonderful scenes that you have just witnessed are those in front of the Imperial Hotel on the famous Ringstrasse in Vienna. The Chancellor Adolf Hitler has just appeared on the balcony of the Imperial Hotel a few seconds ago, and he was acclaimed by the multitude. And now we're taking you back again to Vienna, just for another few moments of that moving scene in front of the Imperial Hotel, underneath the balcony on which the Führer is standing and waving to the thousands of Viennese who have come to greet him and welcome him.
If CBS Radio boycotted the German feeds, the Mutual Radio Network did not. Broadcasting a running crisis always presents many traps, often painful to those caught in them, but amusing to everyone else. In reporting live events over far-flung time zones, something as simple as night and day can suddenly become confounding.
Meanwhile, it is announced that Chancellor Hitler will leave Vienna for Berlin either tonight or Wednesday morning. And of course, tonight meant tonight later on today and not last night.
If there was any sense at CBS that German radio reports might further the Nazi cause in America, I suspect we were mistaken. Somehow, the distortions of the shortwave turned the best-laid plans of German propaganda into a surrealistic horror by the time it reached America.
In just a moment, we expect to broadcast a special program from Vienna, which will be relayed via Berlin. We now take you to Germany.
Die Lichtreklamen leuchten auf, aber die Leute gehen nicht weg. Sie bleiben dabei. Sie schreien und rufen. Ein Volk, ein Reich, ein Führer. Führer, Führer, Führer und immer nur Führer. Und ihr draußen, weiter fahren Sie vielleicht, schritt weiter. Und wieder der Führer auf dem Balkon.
The night before, I had described Austria as a conquered country. That afternoon, as we sat in the CBS newsroom listening to the wild Viennese crowds, we began to exchange bemused glances. Who had conquered whom, we wondered. The next morning, CBS opened the network before dawn, a rare intrusion into my slumber in the days before news became a 24-hour operation. While most of America still slept, Hitler was officially welcomed to Vienna as Austria gave itself to Germany in a nimbus of almost religious hysteria, all in the name of German unification. It was a curious coronation. The people took an oath to Hitler, not the other way around.
Wird der Führer sprechen, ist oben und bald von Schirach. Und nun ist der Führer hier. Wir sehen jetzt über die Menge hinüber und über das Burgtor hinaus den Wagen.
Well, hello, America. That huge burst of cheering now, the second in our transmission, is that greeting the Führer on the Heldenplatz. He has now, with his car, appeared at his destination, at the scene where, within the next few minutes, the authorities of the city of Vienna will officially greet the Chancellor, Führer, leader of the reunited German Reich, Adolf Hitler. Just say that within a very few minutes he expects Adolf Hitler to step out on the balcony of the Hofburg, and he may, when he appears on that balcony, address the multitudes before him. So we're standing by if he should address the masses. And the announcer is now already calling for quiet, quiet please.
Jahrhundertelang haben sich in den unruhevollen Zeiten der Vergangenheit die Säume des Ostens an den Grenzen der alten Mark gebrochen. Jahrhundertelang für alle Zukunft soll sie nunmehr wieder sein, ein eiserner Garant für die Sicherheit und für die Freiheit des Deutschen Reiches und damit ein Untergrund.
That was the sound of Vienna 62 years ago, full partner in a historic depravity the world should never forget. It's worth hearing, I think, not only to remind us of what happened in 1938, but to remind us of what is not happening today. We are caught in the misery of the mighty. We fear doing too little when we should do more, then atone by doing too much when perhaps we should do less. And one more thing. I do wish politicians would resist the temptation to invoke the name of Hitler against their political enemies. This is nuclear rhetoric. Like any obscenity, it must be used with care and discretion if its real meaning and impact are to be preserved.
Newsman Robert Trout, he lives in New York City and Madrid, Spain.